Good morning. 6:48. Oh my goodness, I'm late. 6:48 a.m. on July 14th, a Saturday morning. It's a beautiful morning. I've been talking nonstop since I hit the road this morning. So I gave my class an extra long dose of me today. I'm feeling verbose. Maybe that'll carry forward. Doing a lot of teaching lately, talking about different kinds of things. The class is going about as well as I expected. Having four people in the class is damn near impossible. There aren't enough actions going on in any given period of time to engage the student in any meaningful way. I can't certainly do it by myself. I really need to have 10, 15, even 20 people in the class all banging away with ideas in order to keep everyone engaged. And four people? No. Four people, two of whom are really not really in the class, they're just sort of going through the motions. Yeah, makes it even more difficult. So, yeah, this will, I'm pretty sure, be the last time I teach this class. Might be the last time I teach a class, I don't know. Ooh, I'm kicking right along. 1 mile in 18 minutes here this morning. Usually I'm around 19. So, yeah, I've got Endomondo running in the background, so if you're here to talk to me, you'll bear with me. Let's see. So, yeah, today we got through with, or yesterday actually, they got through with Hughes' Human Built World. And some really interesting comments coming out of it. I'm waiting to get the last two. I've got two so far. One was really quite good. And I left some long comments. One of the things that is difficult to deal with for people who are, in particular, are writing in an academic style for academic audience is the degree to which you're allowed to extemporize? Write stuff you make up. Now, their syntheses are, their syntheses are, in fact, essays. So they're allowed a lot of latitude. But one of the things that I do kind of ask is that the latitude be based on the material that we're covering and the work that they're reading. And if they bring in outside stuff, that's fine, but they have to tell me where it came from. And one of them was, the comment that got to me yesterday was about how technology has led to moral decay. And I'm like, really? Because I didn't read anything in Hughes or Postman that indicated that there was moral decay. So it was an interesting thing for me to stumble on. And I did, quite figuratively, stumble on it. Not literally, but figuratively. And so I left a long comment about, there doesn't seem to be any evidence of moral decay in the two works. And even if we consider the culture, I'm not seeing a lot of evidence of moral decay. The world is not substantively different now than it was in, say, 1960 in terms of morality. At least I don't see it as such. And it could be that I have my head in my sand and I'm not really paying attention. And but the problem that I run into with this kind of sort of sweeping judgment is that it's based on a particular perspective. And the point of reading Hughes after Postman is to introduce them first to Postman and his notion that technological adoption by a culture is not additive, nor is it subtractive. It's ecological. That is, technology doesn't add or take away from a culture. It makes it a different culture. And because a different culture has, almost by definition, a different set of mores, a different set of rules, a different set of constructions that govern behavior. And we're not talking ethics here, because I think ethics hold pretty well, although there's a certain part that is contextual, I think. I don't think it's fair to compare cultures one to the other. So American culture in 1970, pre-computer, pre-internet, pre-World Wide Web, is not American culture 1970 and now, plus computer, plus internet, plus web. And that's not exactly how it works. The culture from 1970 no longer exists. It's been replaced by something else. And I did use the apples and oranges analogy in the talk that I just finished, that an orange is not a degraded apple. We don't make orange pie. We do make marmalade. We don't make orange butter, but we do make apple butter. Does that make one better than the other? I don't think so. Does it mean one is diminished over the other? I don't think so. I think it means it's different. And I believe that the problem is the enculturation of individuals means that they carry forward a cultural perspective, a cultural paradigm, a cultural model into the new culture and expect that the new culture will respond appropriately according to their internalizations. And when it doesn't, things get ugly. And yeah, things get ugly. The difficulty is that the rate of change, which used to be measured in generations, is now measured in months. So we're getting a new culture. We're getting basically a new America about every year. Maybe faster. It's just not spread far enough for it to impinge on awareness. And I really see this as being kind of the root cause for a rise in fundamentalist thinking. And I'm using that in a generalist term, not necessarily just Christian fundamentalists or Islamic fundamentalists, but fundamental conservatism, fundamental liberalism, fundamental libertarianism, which is what I was going to say, but yeah, I think that's true too. So I see that push to the extremes of these various schools of thought, to getting back to a very dogmatic, and I'm using the term deliberately, fundamentalist perspective as a response to the rapid change, as an attempt to delay the evolution of the culture into something that we're not comfortable with, into something that's different from what we expect, into something we don't know how to use, we don't know how to get by in. So I think it was an interesting conversation. I hope the guy that I left a comment for actually comes back and engages me on it, although I suspect that he won't. We'll see. So yeah, today was official weigh-in day. I weigh exactly the same today as I did last Saturday. Which was kind of disappointing, but I lost 4 pounds in the first week, so I can't really be too upset. I'm down 4 net in about 2 weeks. And my goal is 2 pounds in 2 weeks. So I've doubled, you know, I've gone by my goal. I need to lose, well, at this point, in order to pick up my goal, which would be 192 next Saturday, I need to lose 2 pounds this week, which is not impossible. I've sort of been big drop, little drop, couple of gains, big drop, little gain. So it's definitely on the daily pattern. I've certainly seen ups and downs, and we're achieving an equilibrium here. Yesterday was not a good day because I had pizza for supper. Kids wanted pizza, so we got pizza. And I had my 2 allotted slices, which kept me under a calorie count. But I also was short yesterday on nutrition. I didn't have anywhere near enough vegetable matter, and I didn't have my allowed fruit. So I got to do better with that today. Did have a great lunch, though. Some of the bread, the second batch of bread from the bread-making machine, came out quite lovely. It was a lot softer, a lot moister. It fell, but it didn't really bother too much. It did have a much denser bottom than top, so I'm guessing that perhaps there might have been a malfunction in the kneading, the little paddle that goes in the bottom of the machine that kneads the dough. Might not have been quite where it needed to be. And I think I said, I'm not sure I had it seated correctly in the device. It was good, it was tasty. And I spread it with a little bit of hummus, tablespoon hummus per slice, toasted it, and then sliced up fresh tomato on top, and had open-faced tomato and hummus sandwiches for lunch yesterday. And it was delicious. I was short on protein at the end of the day, but that's okay. I'm usually over on protein, so over the course of the week, I think I'm fine. I had one day, I'm only supposed to have like 6.5 or 7 ounces of protein a day, and I think I had at least that. Certainly at least enough to make up the shortfall in overages over the last couple of days, so I'm not too worried. I had a really nice slab of salmon the other night, and that was way over 6.5 ounces, but it was good. I wish the selection of fish were better. It's basically salmon or roughy or catfish, occasionally tilapia. You don't see a lot of swordfish steak. You don't see swordfish steak anywhere. You probably couldn't afford it anyway. There's very little in terms of other kinds of fish, farm-raised trout, which are okay, but it's like, grilling a trout is an interesting challenge. I've done it. Done it before, I can do it again. But if I'm gonna mess around with a trout, it's a lot of work. A, it's a lot of work to cook. B, it's a lot of work to eat. I'm lazy, I'll eat salmon. I do occasionally have tuna steaks, I really do like, and I gotta figure out a way to cook them better. When I grew up, we used to have tuna steaks because my cousin Herbert would go tuna fishing, and we would go with him, and he would harpoon tuna fish. But I don't even know if they can do that anymore. That was 45 years ago, something like that. And even then, the number of tuna fish were on a decline. And I'm pretty certain it hasn't gotten any better in terms of fish stocks and populations. So, yep. Anyway. So my sister Laurie did send me, and I think I mentioned this before, she sent me this treatise on witch women and healing and seeing and all of the other kinds of powers that are actually have quite a long tradition in not only shamanistic tradition, but in a certain sense in pagan, in its original sense of rural tradition, which is really where Tanith Fairport's power comes from, this notion of crone, this idea of change imbuing power. And it was quite fascinating, and a lot of it is going to be very useful in informing Gertie Pinecrest when I get there in the next book. Speaking of the book, I could be near the end of the second draft. I was thinking I was going to get it done this weekend, but no, I don't think so. I really need to look at Rebecca's role on board this ship, because right now she's just sort of there. I'd really like to have her have more to say and more to do. I'd like to develop her a little bit more before we turn she and Tanith loose in the Northlands on their way to Lammas Wood and a search for Gertie Pinecrest amongst the trees. So yeah, something to think about. I gotta figure out how I'm gonna work that. I do have to go through, I did get the cast off early. So all of the places where I went through in the latter part of the book and added the cast in for her broken arm, now I have to take it back out again, which is probably okay because it was kind of half-assed to begin with. But now the challenge is to find all of those little half-assed places where I put it in and get it out. I should also probably mow the backyard today, but it's not even 7 o'clock yet, and it's already way hot. It's not hot. I mean, it's not broiling yet, but it's warm. Not surprising, given that it's July and in summer in the high plains. But, yeah. Beautiful day, though. Good day to write. Good day to stay inside. Not a good day to mow the lawn. So, it could be a problem. If I don't mow it today, it has to wait till Monday. I don't suppose another big day. Another day or two is going to make that much difference given the current condition back there. As it is, I'm probably going to have to mow it twice. Guy walking his dog wearing the same kind of ball cap that I am. Wearing the same kind of overshirt. His is brown, mine's blue, but he's walking a dog. I'm walking my phone. Oh, yeah, I should be coming up on 2 miles. Talk to me, Endomondo. I'm almost past the park, coming up on the big cottonwood tree. The tree is so beautiful. I mean, I'm not a big fan of cottonwoods by and large, because they're generally messy and brittle. But this one is, it reminds me of the elm trees growing up. I grew up when there were still American elms, before the Dutch elm disease took them all out. And we had an elm tree in our backyard. It was huge, it was gorgeous. It was like a big umbrella. Actually had two of them. Like a big umbrella over the house. It was Oh, close to 4 feet across at the base. It was huge. Dutch elm took it out. It's a gorgeous tree. And this one is just like it. So apparently I haven't quite covered my 2 miles yet. Endomondo is not talking to me. Oh. That's interesting. I've got a wet spot in my lawn. That's never a good sign in a desert. Let's see what Endomondo says. Oh, 0.3 of a mile. 0.03 of a mile. So I need about 18 more steps, probably. Anyway, I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day. I will talk to you then.